Thank you very much, Ron. John Hansen here, host of Let's Get Legal. And it's going to be on till 8 o'clock tonight here on a really busy night downtown. Behind me, we've got the Michigan Avenue Bridge, the DuSable Bridge, which is going to light up for fireworks at 7 o'clock. It's going to scare me if I don't remember it's happening. I also see some boat out there that is towing around another platform of Christmas trees and lights. And a lot of festivities happening downtown. Anyways, Let's Get Legal's coming up. We've got a lot of great things. We've got Audrey Anderson joining us. She's a criminal defense attorney. We'll get her take on the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict, as well as an interesting thing that the defense did to prepare for the case. And I'm going to ask her if that happens pretty often. Stephen Leahy is going to be joining us to talk about all things taxes. We've got him here for a lot of time, so we want your calls, 312-981-7200. And I also mentioned the number because our question of the day with a nice prize is this. U.S. history changed when what 89 words were written? You don't have to give me all 89 words. You just have to tell me what they were. 312-981-7200. U.S. history changed when what 89 words were written? Call in right now. See if you can get the answer. Take a wild guess, and I'll tell you about the prize and plenty more coming up on Let's Get Legal after this on WGN. 6:11 here on this Saturday evening. Hope you had a great day, everybody. John Hansen here, host of Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Yeah, it ended up being a pretty nice day, actually. The sun came out. I don't know why my voice is squeaking when I say that. It's going higher than the temperatures did today, but it ended up being a nice day. Hope you had a good one. We're going to have a great show here tonight. And our question of the day is, I got to scroll up to where I worded it. Yes, U.S. history changed when what 89 words were written? Let's go to Des Plaines and say good evening to Karen. Happy Saturday, Karen. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good. It was a nice day. Do anything fun?
No, not too much.
That's
a lot
okay.
of laundry.
A lot of laundry. We did laundry today, too. Feels nice to get it done. I like folding laundry. Anyways, that's not what we're talking about here, Karen. You heard the question. U.S. history changed when what 89 words were written? What's your guess?
My guess is the Gettysburg Address.
Gettysburg Address, speech given by Abraham Lincoln on November 19th, 1863. That would make yesterday the anniversary of the event. The Gettysburg Address is 272 words, Karen.
Oh, brother.
Yeah, no.
All
but
right.
That's a great guess, and I'm really glad that you had that. And I saw that was your guess, by the way, in the commercial break, that I didn't have that information right at hand. I was able to Google it really quickly, Karen. But, hey, thanks for the call. We appreciate you playing.
All right. Have a good night.
You too. Enjoy the rest of the show. 312-981-7200. If you've got a guess for U.S. history changing when what 89 words were written? This one might be a stumper, although I can't have our producer Iridian guess it because she actually guessed it right away, which was cool. I was glad she got it, but I was worried that everyone else was going to get it right away. 312-981-7200. Call right now. We'll have a couple other openings later on in the show. But if you do get it right sometime today, you're going to win a $50 gift card to the 50-50 Restaurant Group, which is awesome stuff. They can be used at any one of their 14 fantastic establishments all over Chicago, including Roots Pizza. I had Roots the other night. So good. And West Town Bakery. So a 50-50 restaurant gift card of $50 to the person that can answer the question of U.S. history changing when what 89 words were written. Iridian's getting some callers on the line right now. While she's doing that, I'll tease what's coming up. We've got attorney Audrey Anderson, who's going to chat about a few things. We're going to break down the Kyle Rittenhouse not guilty verdict. We're not going to labor the point. I know, boy, we've talked a lot about this case, and rightfully so, over the past couple of weeks. But I want to go into a little bit more of the defense strategy. She's a criminal defense attorney with Anderson Attorneys and Advisors, and it'd be interesting to hear a little bit about what she's learned since the not guilty verdict came up. Let's go to Rick. Rick, you are on WGN. Good evening, Rick. How are you? How's it going?
Going well.
All right, 89 words. What is your guess?
Emancipation Proclamation.
That is a great guess. That is not the answer, unfortunately.
Okay.
I'm trying to figure out how many words are in the Emancipation Proclamation, just in case it also happens to be 89, because then I feel like you deserve a prize. But that's not the
answer. I didn't count them.
Yeah. I'll try and get an answer for you, Rick. That's not our answer tonight. Thanks for playing, though.
Okay, thank you.
312-981-7200. U.S. history changing in 89 words. Tell you what, we'll get a couple other answers after the break. We'll take it, though, right now. We'll try and get your answers in quickly, and then we'll talk to Audrey Anderson about the Kyle Rittenhouse case. Here on Let's Get Legal, John Hanson, host of Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Audrey Anderson, in just a moment, I want to take a couple more guesses here on how U.S. history changed in just what 89 words. Let's go to Anthony. Anthony, where are you calling from here this evening? Anthony, you're on WGN.
A more perfect union.
Anthony, yes. I think you're trying to count the words right now. What's your guess?
My guess is the preamble.
And if you would have kept counting, you would have gotten to 52, not 89.
Not enough.
I do love turning on the line and you're just reading it, trying to count with your fingers. Thanks, Anthony.
I memorize it. I know it.
Oh, you know it. Well, that's pretty good. But no, you're just a 30-some words short. Thanks, Anthony, for the call. We appreciate it.
No problem.
All right, let's go to Dawn. Dawn, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good, John. How are you?
Very good. What is your guess?
The Pledge of Allegiance.
31 words in the Pledge of Allegiance. It might be 33. I didn't know if 31 was before or after they added under God in the 50s. But you're about 50 words short, Dawn. I'm sorry to say.
Okay.
That's okay.
Nice to watch you on television.
Oh.
Okay, thanks a lot, John. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too, Dawn. Keep on listening. Let's go to Andy. Andy, you're on WGN.
Thank you. Is it the Declaration of Independence?
The Declaration of Independence, of course, written by Thomas Jefferson, 1776, comes in at 1,320 words, my friend.
Not even close.
No, but like in Price is Right rules, you're still in the game because you didn't go over. Oh, wait, no, you went way over. Never mind. I messed it up. In Price is Right rules, you're way over, my friend.
Thanks, John.
Hey, Andy, have a good one. Yeah, this is a little bit of a stumper. We'll keep on getting calls. Not right now. I know a lot of people are calling in. Tell you what, we'll do it a little bit later in the show. So if you've got a guess, hold on to it. We'll have some more time to figure out what 89 words changed U.S. history. We'll get to that in a little bit, but we're changing gears here, and obviously the biggest legal story of the week has to have been the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict after, a long time of deliberating. Well, a long time in my interpretation, but maybe not so. 3 or 4 days, they came up with the not guilty verdict on all counts. We got attorney Audrey Anderson joining us right now from Anderson Attorneys and Advisors. Audrey, thanks for hopping on with us for a second straight week to talk about this case.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm very excited to talk about this.
And before we dive into it, I kind of mentioned how long the jury deliberated for. Did it surprise you? Did it not surprise you in terms of the length? I mean, there was a lot of things they had to kind of dive into that were really technical and difficult.
That's a good point. There were a lot of things for them to listen to. And don't forget, this is all brand new for the jurors. They're not any individuals with legal background. So for them, all these concepts of self-defense, aggressor, provoking violence, that's all new. And there was a lot of evidence and videos for them to consider and deliberate on. So 4 days does seem long, but for the charges and the things that they had to review, it seemed an appropriate amount of time.
Not guilty or guilty, I do always appreciate a jury that does its due diligence and really dives deep into it. I know it's hard to sit and wait, and even harder for the defendants and, of course, the families of those who died, but an important thing to do. A lot of hay was made about the jury instructions, right? About even a juror asking to bring it home and the confusing aspect of jury instructions. Jury instructions are given in every jury trial, I imagine, right? And they're not easy to understand. Even someone with a legal mind sometimes has to break those things down. That's hard.
Right. They can get very, very complicated, especially with self-defense. There's a lot of additional instructions. But it was somewhat unusual that the judge allowed the jurors to actually take them home with them to review. I've never encountered that before, but perhaps that's something that this specific judge has done before, but that's definitely unique and unusual.
What would be the worry of a juror bringing it home? Is the idea not necessarily that they bring it home, but what they're doing when they get there? Are they calling and reading the instructions to someone else for an opinion? Like, is that the concern about, you know, kind of bringing them out of the courtroom area?
I think that's always a concern, even though that they're instructed to not discuss their testimony that they've heard, any of the evidence. But yes, that they go home, that they look things up themselves, even though they're not supposed to, because they're really supposed to deliberate all 12 of them together, deciding together what they think everything means and how the evidence fits within those rules and the instructions.
That's interesting. So they're really not even supposed to go home and analyze too deeply about things because it's supposed to be a discussion together.
Right, exactly.
I know that there was jurors overheard when they came back into the room, I think on the day the verdict was read in the morning, talking about how stressful it was. One juror, a reporter, overheard a juror say something like, I couldn't sleep last night, or I slept a lot less. This is a lot that we are asking a jury of our peers to go through. And I imagine, you know, a case like this with a high profile, that's stressful on the on these folks.
It's very stressful. There, I don't know how many jurors I have spoken to over the years, these past 20 years, afterwards, and they all say the exact same thing, that it is very stressful. It's overall been a very positive experience for them, but it is. It puts a lot of pressure on them as regular people to decide a person's guilt or innocence. And that's why it's very important during the initial questioning by the judge and the attorneys to make sure that jurors really do take it serious and that they can understand and appreciate the seriousness of it and that they're able to handle that.
I was listening afterwards about polling of the jurors done by attorneys. Is that an official thing that happens as part of courtroom procedure, like there's a room where the attorneys can go talk to the jurors, or is it an informal thing? They find out who the juror was, they literally walk up and talk to them and find out what made them tick or not tick.
Right, so polling the jury, what the judge does is the clerk typically, or sometimes the judge, in the open courtroom will ask each juror to stand and ask them if this now and has been their verdict.
Okay.
And they say yes. And then after that, the jurors go back to their room to gather their belongings. And usually attorneys can wait where the jurors come out to speak with them. And if the jurors want to stop and talk, that they can. And sometimes, depending on the judge, they'll let the attorneys go back to the juror room, and the judge will ask the jurors first if they want to speak with the attorneys, just to answer general questions, or just so the attorneys can get feedback about what they thought were critical arguments that were made or what they thought of certain witnesses.
In your experiences, do most jurors want to talk, or are they just ready to go home?
Actually, most jurors do want to talk because they have so many questions about the process, and they like us knowing what they're thinking because it shows value to them and their process and the time that they spent listening to the trial.
Do you learn critical information in that discussion, not only about retrospectively about what happened, but does it inform and help you do things differently in future trials?
Yes, it definitely does. It's very, very beneficial, I think. Although each jury is so different, the makeup of the jurors themselves, but it is important to see what regular people who sit on the jury, what they think of the process.
We're talking with Audrey Anderson from Anderson Attorneys and Advisors, who's a criminal defense attorney now, but worked in the state's attorney's office in DuPage County, if you didn't hear our conversation last week. On the other side of it, on the prosecution side, which one is, I don't want to say which one's harder, Audrey, because that's a weird question. They're both difficult in their own ways. Waiting for a jury to come back, is that harder as a defense attorney, or is it harder as a prosecutor, or is it different feelings and it's hard to compare?
Right. It's different feelings. It's hard to compare. It's difficult on both sides. As a prosecutor, it's difficult because you're waiting and you're consoling the families who have lost a loved one or who have gone through a trauma. But then on the flip side, as a defense attorney, you're representing an individual whose life really hangs in the balance depending on the outcome of this trial.
Yeah.
So it's difficult for them and their family as well.
Let's talk about the defense in this case, putting on a mock trial, which I imagine is pretty common for, you know, big profile cases or defense attorneys. But they kind of did two different scenarios, and it may have led to the decision to whether Kyle Rittenhouse took the stand or not, right?
Correct. Definitely. That was very smart, especially in these very big, high profile cases. That's something that defense attorneys do a lot, do mock trials, just to see what witnesses, how they come off, how regular people view their witnesses and certain arguments that are made.
So they did a mock trial with Kyle testifying and one without, and apparently they were swayed enough by his testimony to bring him to the courtroom and actually do it in the live thing. But I imagine that mock trial is what ultimately decided for them to do it, correct?
Definitely, absolutely, because it not only gives the defense attorneys the knowledge to see what a juror thinks of their client, but it also gives them and their client the confidence to go up there on the stand and testify. So it makes your client more comfortable because he's already run through it one time with you asking questions and one of your partners pretending to be the prosecutor during cross-examination.
Still a risk, though, even if you feel good about how the mock trial went.
That's very true. It's always a risk because your client and you know it's just pretend to practice. But when it's the real thing, there is a lot of pressure.
I know a lot of people are upset about how the verdict went down. I'm not going to ask you specifically about that. I know that we had protests here in downtown Chicago about that. This is really hard because there's a lot to tackle with a verdict like this. There's a lot of extraneous circumstances going in specifically to this trial. But the prosecution really had a steep hill to climb here, didn't they?
They absolutely did. Overcoming self-defense, especially when you have other evidence, not just the defendant testifying, such as video evidence. I mean, technology is out there all the time. There's media coverage, surveillance footage, cell phone camera footage. It's all out there, and you never know with your prosecution witnesses what they're going to say, and it's very difficult to overcome self-defense in a situation like this.
I heard some people say that this was the most surprising not guilty verdict, complete exoneration since O.J. Simpson. But that self-defense is a lot more difficult in those sorts of things than just a simple guilt or innocent, or I should say, they've proven beyond a reasonable doubt, right?
That's true, because really, if you think about it, the prosecutor has to prove two things. First, they have to show that he committed these murders. And then they have another hurdle. They have to have witnesses to defeat the defense of self-defense. They have to show that the defendant truly was the aggressor to begin with. So they're really tackling two huge burdens and hills to overcome.
All right. Audrey, you don't mind sticking around a little bit, right? That's okay with you?
That sounds great.
All right, great. I'm going to put Audrey on hold. Of course, Audrey Anderson from Anderson Attorneys and Advisors. We'll have more information about them and what they're doing, a little bit more about Rittenhouse, and a very rare clemency determined by an Oklahoma governor. A very high-profile case. Kind of surprised me that clemency was granted. We'll talk with Audrey Anderson about that after the news here on WGN. It's Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. People still trying to guess at our question of the day. Don't worry, we will have some time for you to answer it a little bit later this hour and the next one, too. What 89 words changed U.S. history? We'll get to that a little bit later on, but we're continuing our conversation with Audrey Anderson, who's a defense attorney. Audrey, thanks for continuing this conversation here after the news. A little bit more about the Kyle Rittenhouse case before I switch gears. You know, a lot of people, you know, kind of upset with the result, as I mentioned. A lot of people happy about it, too. But, you know, there is something about the jury verdict, and Joe Biden said this, other people have said this, even ones that are disappointed, is that there is something, I don't know. I mean, there's something very American about a jury trial, and that there's a certain respect that needs to be given to a jury verdict, correct? I mean, you must feel that, too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Jury trial is essential for our system of justice. And those 12 jurors, those men and women that sat there, they gave everything that they had. They had immense pressure. They took a significant amount of time to reach their decision. So calling into question their time and decision is could be detrimental for our judicial system.
Right. Right. I almost feel like it's like elections, right? It's like it's one of those things. Win or lose, goes your way, doesn't go your way. The system is important, and there's an honor to that. In certain moments of the trial, the judge really hammered at prosecutors, and a lot of people were wondering and worried of a mistrial with prejudice. Can you first explain what that is?
Absolutely. A mistrial with prejudice means that the prosecutors would not be permitted to try Rittenhouse over again if the mistrial was granted, meaning it would just be a mistrial forever and no one would ever determine truly his guilt or innocence.
And I think that would probably be the worst scenario for people, right? Because that's one person making a really important decision.
Absolutely. So it's definitely, even though attorneys and other individuals were questioning what the judge would do, that would definitely have been detrimental. And poor Mr. Rittenhouse, it would have been hanging over his head for the rest of his life, and he's only 18 years old.
Right. Does that often happen? Does that happen very often? That's probably got to be an extraordinary thing.
It's very rare to grant a mistrial with prejudice. If it was a mistrial without prejudice, that means that the prosecutor can go back and start over and pick a new jury and try that individual again with the exact same charges.
As we waited for 4 days, a lot of prognosticators, including myself, people who don't know a lot about law and the legal system, wondered as it goes longer and longer, is that better for prosecution? Is that better for defense? What do you think normally? Is it really impossible? Does it matter case by case?
It's really impossible. It's definitely case by case, but I think a lot of people think the longer the jury's out, the better it is. for the defense. Because if it was such a slam dunk for the prosecutors, the jurors would have come back sooner.
Yeah. I think that people who, if you think it's a slam dunk either way, people start to get worried when it goes a little bit longer. Like if you think it's a slam dunk, not guilty, which a lot of people did. A lot of people were saying, this is a no-brainer, not guilty based on everything I saw. Not everyone said that, but a lot of people said that. And then as it went on, I was talking on the Mincing Rascals, a show, a podcast we do here on WGN. Folks that I was chatting with there, because some of the co-hosts felt that actually as it went longer, it was better for the prosecution. I guess it's best not to read the tea leaves too much and just wait to see what the jury says.
That's very true. It could go either way each time.
Yeah. Oklahoma's governor spared the life of Julius Jones on Thursday, just hours before his scheduled execution. It had drawn widespread outcry. I mean, people were protesting in the Capitol in Oklahoma City. There was lots of protests about doubts about guilt and the slaying of a businessman more than 20 years ago. Governor Kevin Stitt commuted the 41-year-old sentence to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. That was the recommendation, I believe, of the parole board. He had been scheduled for execution just hours later, an insanely tense situation. Audrey, do you know much about how often is it? I mean, that's pretty rare for clemency to be granted that late in these circumstances.
It does seem as if it was fairly late for the governor to grant that, but it does happen. And I think it just shows the struggle that governors have with one person interpreting the decision from the judicial system and overturning it.
Do you think, but I guess that there has to be one person at the end of that line, right? Or do you feel like it should be like state Supreme Courts? I guess I shouldn't ask you your opinion too deeply on this because you're part of the system, but it is a lot for one person to have to handle.
It is a lot for one person to handle. And he had a lot of evidence to look at. Like you mentioned, the parole board earlier the month had voted to commute the sentence to life in prison without the possibility of parole. And others had supported it as well. But then, you know, the judicial system, the judge, the jury found him guilty and sentenced him to death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really intense case. A lot of people on both sides of it. Speaking of both sides, we're talking with Audrey Anderson, of course, was a prosecutor working in the state's attorney's office in DuPage County, now a defense attorney. And Audrey, how can people reach out to you? What's the best way?
They can contact us through our website or give us a call on our phone. We're happy to answer any questions that they have or help them with any cases that they have in the surrounding counties.
Yeah, for sure. It's AndersonAA.com. The phone number is 630-877-5800. That's 630-877-5800. And the website, again, AndersonAA.com. Audrey, thanks for giving us a little extra time today. We appreciate it and have a great rest of your weekend, okay?
Thank you so much for inviting me. Have a great night as well.
Yeah, we really appreciate her expertise on the matter. All right, folks, Stephen Leahy is here. He's chugging some coffee. I can see him across the glass. We're going to be talking about all things taxes. I also can't wait to find out how much traffic he got stuck in because I was in the exact same mess about 2 hours ago here on this Saturday afternoon. The always entertaining Stephen Leahy is here for your questions as well, 312-981-7200. Maybe I'll even get him to take a stab at the guess of the question of the day, which is U.S. history changed when what 89 words were written? We'll get to that and plenty more coming up with Stephen Leahy. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. A very happy Saturday evening, 6:46 here on this Saturday night. I hope you're enjoying yourself, everyone. There's about a million people downtown, I think, Stephen Leahy. And you've got the prime view.
Yeah.
You're looking here west along the river. You can see the barge where the fireworks are about to go off.
Never get in the way of Chicagoans and their fireworks.
They're always excited to see them.
They are.
And they will not let you drive past them, will they?
Oh, and talk about a crowd. It's good to see.
Hey, it's just nice to see people out. But it's not easy to find parking. And Stephen pretty much
walking
walked.
Here.
Yes,
everything's
right?
Blacked off. Yeah. Try to get over through Michigan Avenue. And again, I've been down here for 40 years or more. I know the Pedway. But the police know those ways, too.
Oh, they sure do. They sure did. I went straight right after I got on the expressway. I'm like, I'm going lower Wacker. I was at lower Wacker for a little while. But we made it, Stephen. Yeah, that's all that matters. 312-981-7200. Start getting on the line now. If anyone doesn't know Stephen Leahy, you haven't been listening to this station, obviously, but Stephen Leahy from the law offices of Stephen Leahy, ChicagoTaxTeam.com. You can reach him anytime, 312-664-6649. You do all sorts of things tax-related, and I know that a lot of people right now are starting to get a little trepidation about next year's taxes, not only because it's that time, but
it's all over the news.
There's a lot of unanswered questions about what's going to happen. We saw the Build Back Better Act go through the House.
Yeah.
The Senate's a whole other story. We'll see if it passes. But there could be some changes is all that we got to talk about, right?
Absolutely. But and also, there's two other acts. The American Rescue Plan, which passed in March.
Mm-hmm.
So there's implications there for taxpayers. The infrastructure bill has some problems. Cryptocurrency, things like that. So there's a lot of changes going on. As you mentioned, it's a lot of it's still up in the air.
Yeah.
And so that means that we could still influence it, maybe. Mm-hmm. And so there's some things that I object to, you know, for privacy reasons. The bank statement thing.
Oh, yeah.
That was kind of taken out, but now we're not sure if it's taken out.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too, about talking about Build Back Better. And again, infrastructure was the first one, the bipartisan infrastructure bill. Really, the major thing that impacted tax-wise is the cryptocurrency, what I understand. The Build Back Better bill, we have had so many different plans floated for how the revenues are going to pay for. For a day, it looked like they were going to tax unrealized gain. That's gone now.
That's gone.
Apparently. Yes. Allegedly. Although, but it changes.
Although the Treasury Secretary Yellen was just talking about it again two days ago.
And I think that's part of the difficult thing. Is that hard for you to kind of, you look one way one day and it's another thing the next, right? I guess we should just wait.
Exactly. And, you know, I remember when the last time the big change, I think it was 2017, and I did a conference and I was, you know, just about the changes. But it's all a guess.
Right.
Because there's the horse trading that's going to go on between now, if it passes, mm-hmm. and now and that time. So you never know what's going to get in. But they keep floating it, and then they take it out for against the bank statement reporting. They put it out there, then they take it out, then they change it, then they put it out there again. And then 21 Democratic congressmen came out and said, oh, we're not going to do that. And so they took it off again. But last I heard, it's back in.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And salt is another thing that's
salt.
Back in.
The
but
state and local taxes, yes. If you don't know what that salt is.
Right now, capped at 10,000. But allegedly might go up to an $80,000 cap.
And there's
we'll see.
And there's some talk about a no cap.
Right.
And then just capping who can take it.
Yes.
So if you make more than $400,000, that seems to be the level that they want to.
If your brain hurts, it's okay. We're going to get through this together. I guess what this all rounds up to, Stephen, is that 2022, when you're filing your 2021, what a great year to talk to someone like you,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I would tell you, the last time they changed the tax, as I mentioned in 2000, the goal was to simplify the tax reporting. And so they increased the exemptions, the standard deductions, so you didn't have to do all this.
Which did make it somewhat similar for a lot of people.
It really did. But now what's going on, it's going to make it more difficult again.
Yeah. It is, and it's tough, and I know, you know, politics gets middled into it, but at the end of the day, the law is the law, and whether you like it or not, you're still going to have to follow it.
Exactly.
Another thing, and we can dive more deeper into these, 312-981-7200, let's get those phone lines lit up. We've got a lot of questions coming in on the text line. One of the biggest things about Build Back Better is the idea of the IRS getting a bunch of money.
$80 billion.
Right. In the hopes that it would bring in, they think, $400 billion in revenue. There's been a little bit of variance in terms of how much they actually are going to get back. The score came back from the Joint Tax Institute around $127 billion, whatever. Anyways, point is they're trying to give them some money so that they can get more in the long run. Does that worry you? I know that the bank account things is scary, that they might have access to be able to see what's going on. And I know that's a libertarian argument, and a lot of people are scared by it. But overall, getting people that cheat on their taxes.
Well, that's not really the case.
Okay.
You know? It's not really the key about cheating. But yeah, there are people who cheat. I liken it a lot to what happened here in Chicago recently about the 6 mile per hour over.
Okay.
Right? And getting a ticket at 6 miles over. It's technically a violation of the law, but it's ridiculous, in my opinion. To give somebody a red light ticket for 6 miles over, the variance in my speedometer and that equipment that's tracking me, that variance is probably 6 miles an hour.
So what you're suggesting is that like simple honest mistakes, rounding errors, or differences in the interpretation, because like even when you use a service to do your taxes, you're kind of like, oh, I don't know, something like this, that those simple variances could then be penalized and you might get in trouble.
Exactly. And it's like you want to squeeze every dollar you can out of everybody, and it becomes oppressive. In my opinion.
Yeah. No, I mean, a lot of people feel that way. A lot of people think, well, good, they're going after millionaires and billionaires who are cheating on their taxes. Maybe they will go after some of those folks. Okay, that's good.
Why did they give salt?
Right. Right. 312-981-7200. I know we're all a little bit all over the place.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the bank statement reporting. What is that? What is the demise of that?
Okay, so remember in 2011, well, actually before that, right, we started with the W-2 reporting.
Mm-hmm.
And some years ago, your job had to start reporting how much money they paid you and take out the taxes
to
the federal government, to the IRS. So when they file that and they give it to you at the end of the year to report on your taxes, they also send that to the IRS.
Okay.
So the IRS has a copy of it.
Makes sense.
So a lot of times when people come to see me and they haven't filed their tax returns in some couple years, I can go to the IRS. They have all that information. And so because a lot of times what people do when they're behind in their tax return is they get frozen because they're like, I don't have this information.
I don't have the documents.
What am I going to do?
Right.
And so instead of trying to solve it, they just freeze and then they put it behind them and ignore it. So you can go to the IRS and get these documents. They're there. So if somebody gave a W-2, as I mentioned, or a 1099, mm-hmm. or your mortgage interest, 1098s, all those are given to the IRS. And so you can go to the IRS, get those documents, and then use them to file your back tax returns and get back into compliance. Here's the secret to solving IRS problems forever. It's compliance,
mm-hmm.
getting in compliance, filing your tax returns on time, and paying your taxes on time from today forward.
Yes.
All the stuff behind you, we can fix.
Okay,
but you can't fix what's behind you if you keep creating new problems.
Do you think it's like people who don't want to go to the doctor's office because they don't want to see bad news or afraid of bad news, but when you go, you feel a lot better because like, hey, from now on, we're going to start taking care of this stuff. It's a little bit like coming to you, right?
I get that. The biggest thing I get is people say, I can't sleep at night.
Yeah.
You know, I always tell them, hand me the problem, and then you don't have to worry about it anymore.
Right.
We're going to fix it, and I can show you how to fix it. Because, again, what gets people is that they think there's no remedy.
Right.
And so they're afraid to face it.
Yeah, I don't think it's people that think they're going to get away with it forever. I think it's people afraid of tackling it.
Exactly. And it's a lot of times it's going to change the way you live.
Yeah.
Right? So if I'm running my own business and I'm not paying taxes, so I'm living on that money. So now if I start paying taxes, I've already taken a big cut in pay.
Right.
Right. Because I got to start paying taxes. Right. Plus, I got to start paying what I owe.
Right.
So now it's a bigger cut. So people don't want to face that.
Right.
And sometimes that's exactly the way I just described it. That's the way it works out. But sometimes not.
Right.
And so you don't know until you tackle the problem.
If that's you, if you're losing sleep over anything, start to tackle it, whatever it is. But if it's because of tax returns that you maybe have not done, you know you're not in compliance, ChicagoTaxTeam.com, 312-664-6649. Steven, I imagine even going to the website or making that first call, they start to feel better.
I absolutely, especially after the first call.
Yeah.
Because I spend time with people, and I'm not one to put a clock on it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you all the time you need, and sometimes I run behind with another client. I always tell them, hey, I'm going to give you all the time, too.
Right.
So, you know, ask the questions. Let's tackle the questions and get you answers.
Yeah. He'll take your blood pressure, too. He'll do everything. He'll just do everything the doctor does. Stephen Leahy, thanks for being here. We're going to keep you into the 7 o'clock hour, right?
That's good.
We're going to keep you going. 312-981-7200. Get on the phone lines. Get on the text lines. Got a lot. A lot of questions coming in. We want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. More coming up on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, after the news on WGN. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. John Hansen here at 7:36, taking you till 8 o'clock. Stephen Leahy is in the building answering your tax questions. Do you ever get stumped, Stephen, live on air? I bet you do every now and then.
I do. You know why? Because I'm not a tax preparer.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times I have tax preparers who work for me, and they're the best.
Right.
You know, but when people, they hear that I'm a tax attorney, someone might say, oh, is this deductible? I have to say, I don't know.
I don't know everything. Yeah.
Because these are things that I don't really handle.
Well, it's got to be impossible to know everything about tax law, especially as it changes every single year.
Have you seen the tax code?
Yeah.
It's like two books, like 6 inches thick.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
That's why you have a team, ChicagoTaxTeam.com.
Exactly.
312-664-6649. So we do our best here, including with this question from the 312. My father's left an estate of several million dollars. He passed away 2 years ago. The estate tax has been paid. About 60% of the estate has been distributed to myself and my siblings. Okay. The executor is waiting for a letter from the IRS before distributing the remaining portions, which would clear the estate of any further tax responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
What other tax might be applicable to the estate pleas.
Capital gains. I'm having another case just like this where a group of people, they sold a piece of property that was the last thing of the in the trust. And then the trust was distributing it to other trusts because they set this up many, many years ago. And the executor wants to keep some of the money because he's going to be on the hook as the executor of the estate for any taxes that come due. And if they distribute the money with, then he's going to start going back after you to get the money. And if he can't get it, he's going to be liable for it.
Okay.
So they're going to hold on to that money. And again, what's going on with capital gains tax? They might make it retroactive for this year.
I see what you're
saying. So you don't even know what the capital gains tax might be. Right now it might be 15% or 20%, but it might go to 33% or 35%. So you don't know, so the executor doesn't know what that's going to be, and so as a safety measure, they're holding on to the money to find out what the final bill is going to be, and
right,
then they can pay it and then distribute the money.
Waiting for the IRS.
Yes.
Still a lot of people doing that now for income tax returns.
Everybody's waiting on the IRS. Yes.
Right.
It's very, not only because of the pandemic, and that's a big reason, because the pandemic, they, like everybody else, the IRS sent everybody home and they weren't working for many months. And then they came back and then they started doing the PPP loans, and they distributed that money, and then they distributed the stimulus money, and they distributed that money, and now they have the child tax credits where they had to redo it, and they distributed that money, and then Congress changed the law for for unemployment compensation.
Right.
So when people first filed their tax return, unemployment compensation was taxable. Congress, like we were just talking about, sometimes they do it retroactively. They said, we're going to change the rule retroactively. And now unemployment compensation won't be taxable. So then the IRS had to redo everybody's tax return and then send that money back. So all of that together has really caused a backup to the IRS. And they are way behind.
What Steven's trying to say is he's really glad I stopped texting him asking where my return was, because it was long delayed. But like you talk about this kind of domino effect, my tax return being delayed also changed the stimulus money that I got or didn't get and needed to get.
Because
there were different brackets from year to year, and they were going off an old return as opposed to a new return. It's messy. So when we take a look at what's in the Build Back Better Act, one of the staples of it is giving the IRS
$80 billion
to not only try and get, and look, this can be controversial. Are we going to try and get more money? But there's no question the IRS could use some more resources, right? I mean, at the end of the day?
I will debate that.
Really?
Yes, and here's why. The IRS does electronic tax returns on more than 90%. Like, it's at 95%. 10 years ago, it was like
30%. Yeah.
Yes. And so, and if you've ever seen the labor-intensive way that they had to take the mail, unpack it, put it through the system, keep those for a long time. They had to put them away. All of that's gone.
Okay.
And so the IRS saves a ton of money.
So you think they should be more efficient right now?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I hear it all the time. Oh, you know, they've really cut back on the IRS, and the IRS isn't making it what they used to make, and their budget's way down. So I always ask people this. What do you think the budget of the IRS is? You know?
No idea.
And people ask, you know, people, what do you think, $1 billion? It's $14 billion a year, okay? So $80 billion over 10 years is an $8 billion a year increase, so 70%. So they want to increase the IRS by 70%. If they increase the IRS by 70%, you think all of those new people are going to go after rich people? There'd be one IRS agent for every rich person in America.
Right.
So this is where the money's going to come from, right? Because I like that, because you mentioned that they said it was going to be $400 billion. Some said that
in
was
revenue
gonna be
gained. Yeah.
I've heard and I've heard this. It was $1 trillion, and because they were trying to match it to whatever they want, the money that they were going to spend, they wanted to match it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, now the CBA,
CBO, yeah.
CB, K, came back and said, hey, you're not going to get that much money from it. And
some
it
people,
makes sense.
Some people challenge that and say that they'll get more. We'll see.
We'll
see if the bill even becomes a law. I mean, this has not happened yet. Hey, by the way, the 312 that was asking about the distribution of the estate and the waiting said, are you saying we may need to wait another year till 2022? Does Build Back Better apply to this estate? I guess it means we'll have to wait and see.
That's true. And again, you'll know by the end of the year what the rate is.
Right.
Okay. So you probably don't have to wait till next year, but you do have to wait till to see if this bill passes, and then if it's retroactive.
Yeah. Stephen Leahy, you do incredible work. I know a lot of people are gearing up for the end of the year. There's a lot of uncertainty out there. ChicagoTaxTeam.com is a great place to start. Calling you at 312-664-6649 is another way. What sorts of people are you looking for to call you? Who should be calling you right now?
Generally, my clients are small business people. And we were talking off the air, because who pays the most taxes in our society? Small business people, because they don't structure their business correctly. And I always say, I have my clients very good at what they do. I have doctors, I have lawyers, I have carpenters, and name the profession, bakers, name the profession and they're very good at what they do. They're just not good at bookkeeping. Mm-hmm. And so then they get behind in it. And then because sometimes you'll mention to someone, you know, I have a client who hasn't filed their tax returns in 5 years. And people say, how could that be? It's like, well, you know, 1 year turns into two, turns into five very quickly. And people put it out of sight, out of mind. And they say, I'll do it next year. And I think it's amazing sometimes when people come to see me and they haven't filed their tax return in 5 years. But every year they file an extension. Right, so it's like, I have an extension. Yeah. So they mean well. They want to get it done. Yep. They just get overwhelmed by the tax thing, and then it snowballs and it becomes unmanageable.
The longer you haven't gone to the dentist, the longer you're not going to go to the dentist. And then when you do, it may be a little painful.
Yes,
but
it stops the pain in the future.
Right. I'm really trying to get a dentist analogy here. No, Stephen Leahy.
Well, that's what I said. It stops the pain in the future because you go to the... Yeah. Otherwise, your tooth is going to hurt forever.
Right. So if you want a crown on your taxes or a root canal, well, I'm really trying to stretch the metaphor.
I don't want the root canal, though, because root canal sounds like it's very painful. And it is, but I don't want that.
I always try and find metaphors, Stephen, or similes. Let's just see this. Stephen Leahy, ChicagoTaxTeam.com. 312-664-6649. Stephen, I love talking to you, man. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thanks for having me, John. I appreciate it.
And I'm glad I ordered the fireworks show just
for
you.
It's a big celebration.
Yeah, very good. 312-917-2200 is our number. I've got two people on the line on hold. We'll get to them in a little bit. But I want you there, too, because we're trying to answer this question. This is week two of this question. U.S. history changed when what 89 words were written? And we want your answer. And if you get the answer, you're going to get a $50 gift card to 5050 Restaurant, which, of course, has 14 fantastic establishments all over Chicago, including Roots Pizza and Westtown Bakery, both great establishments. What changed U.S. history with just 89 words? After this on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. I always love talking to Stephen Leahy, ChicagoTaxTeam.com, 312-664-6649. And our question of the day, U.S. history changed in 89 words. What were those 89 words? We've had great guesses so far. We had the preamble. We had the Declaration of Independence. We had the 15th and 16th Amendment. We had a couple others, the Pledge of Allegiance. None of those answers are correct. So if you were just about to call in with that, come up with another one. 312-981-7200. We'll talk about the prize in just one moment, but let's go to Lori. Lori, you've been holding on so long. Thanks for holding with us, Lori.
Oh, hi, John. How are you?
Doing well. How's your night going?
Oh, pretty well. Pretty well so far.
Well, let's try and make it a little better, okay? $50 gift card. Go ahead.
Oh, the Civil Rights Act?
The Civil Rights Act. I imagine you're referring to the 1965 Civil Rights Act, a huge one of that. No, that is not the answer, Lori. I'm so sorry.
No.
I know.
I thought it was 64.
Oh, 64. Okay, you're probably right. I might have messed up my years.
Oh.
Either way, I didn't.
Oh, it's not. Okay.
It's not the Civil Rights Act, but that's a great guess, okay. Lori. Thanks for calling.
Are you going to give the answer before you head out tonight?
Someone's got to get it, otherwise it transfers to next week.
Oh, gosh. I
know.
It was that.
No. Okay. So someone's got to help Lori out because she wants to know that answer. I do, too. Well, I know the answer. Iridian got it. I know Ron got it, too. I'm glad we didn't ask you live on the air, Ron. He's giving me a thumbs up. 312-981-7200. 89 words that changed the country, that changed U.S. history. This one's hard because, of course, there's a lot of important speeches that have been given. Should we get clues yet, Iridian, or no? No, we'll wait. Maybe one clue. Here's my clue. The first word of the 89 words is you. You. Y-O-U. 312-981-7200. If you got any guesses, oh, the phone lines are lighting up now, and we'll see if we can get the right answer for you. Tell you what, I'm going to take this break a little early, Iridian, and we'll get some more more callers lined up. We'll also do, if we have some time, top three law stories of the week. So 89 words, change U.S. history, starts with you. We'll get that answer hopefully after the break, as well as the top three law stories of the week here on Let's Get Legal. And before we wrap things up, we got to get an answer to the question of the day. We'll find out if we can do it. What 89 words changed U.S. history? Let's go to Gary. Gary, you're on WGN. How's your night going, Gary?
Well, a little cool, but having a good night.
A little cool. Like all right. What's your guess, my friend?
My guess is the Gettysburg Address.
We had that guess earlier in the show, which obviously probably means that you know it's wrong, but it was close. It was 272 words was the Gettysburg Address when it was issued a bunch of years ago yesterday, 1863. I can't do the math in my head, but a long time ago yesterday was the anniversary. Gary, thanks for the phone call. Sorry you didn't get it right, my friend.
Okay, have a great night and great show. Thank you.
Yeah, you too. Let's go to Claire. Claire, you're on WGN. How's your evening going, Claire?
Real smooth, thank you.
Where are you calling from, by the way?
I'm calling from Oak Lawn, Illinois.
Oak Lawn. Shout out to Oak Lawn. All right, what's your guess?
Emancipation Proclamation.
The Emancipation Proclamation, of course. January 1st, 1863, as the nation approached its third year of the bloody Civil War, comes in at 719 words, Claire.
Oh, can I get one more try?
No. I would let you, but I got other callers on the line, but I do appreciate it, Claire. Good try, though.
So much. Have a good.
Yeah, you too. Was that me? Should I have given her one more try? No, I didn't. I want to give everyone at least one chance at a guess. I don't want to run out of time. Let's go to Dale. Dale, you're on WGN. How are you doing this evening, Dale?
Oh, not too bad. Yourself?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. Where are you calling from?
Michigan City.
I was just passing through Michigan City about a couple weeks ago. Went up to Saugatuck. Had a nice little weekend up there, and passed right on by. Everything good in Michigan City tonight?
Yeah, not too shabby. Just got off work, so I'm about to enjoy myself a little bit before I go to bed.
Yeah, exactly. Let's hope you can win. By the way, the prize, if you get the question right, is a $50 gift card to the 50-50 Restaurant Group, which can be used at any of their 14 fantastic establishments across Chicago, including Roots Pizza and Westtown Bakery. 89 words. What are you going with, my friend?
I have a dream speech.
That is a great guess. Of course, Martin Luther King. The entire speech, longer than 89 words. The most quoted portion, I looked it up. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be engulfed, every hill should be exalted, every mountain should be made low, the rough places will be made plains, and the crooked places will be made straight. The glory of the Lord and all that comes to about 60 words. So, Gail, a little bit short, my friend, of the quoted speech. But a great guess.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate it. 312-981-7200. If you've got a guess, let's go to Michelle. Michelle, you're on WGN. Where are you calling from this evening, Michelle?
I'm calling from Oak Park, Illinois.
Oak Park. How are things in Oak Park?
Pretty peaceful. Getting a little chilly, a little dark, but yes. All's well.
All right. 89 words that changed U.S. history. What is your guess?
Miranda warnings.
The Miranda warnings. It starts with the word you. You have a right to remain silent and refuse to answer questions. Anything you say can be used against you in a court of law. And it goes on to 89 words. You are our winner, Michelle.
Cool.
Congratulations. Now, you are the winner. You're going to get this gift card, which is great. If anyone calls or wants to write me an angry email, Miranda doesn't specifically say word for word what an officer has to say when you are under arrest. But the general interpretation puts it at 89 words. Some jurisdictions, it's 85. Some, it's 91. Don't write me an angry email, because we're all happy Michelle won, right?
Absolutely.
Michelle is our winner. She's going home with a $50 gift card to the 50-50 restaurant group to be used at any of the 14 fantastic establishments, Roots Pizza and Westtown Bakery. And, of course, Miranda, was a huge decision by the U.S. Supreme Court that said that you had a right to know exactly why you were under arrest and what your rights were. That's the 1966 case, Miranda v. Arizona. Michelle, congratulations. Stay on the line, okay, and have a great night.
Thanks, you too, John.
Oh, I'm so glad we got an answer, not only for the satisfaction of everyone, but Lori specifically, one of the earlier guessers, really wanted to end with that satisfaction. Should I tease ahead to what the question will be next week, Iridian? Here's what we'll start with next week as the question of the day, with the same chance of the same prize. Here it is. I got to find it. Okay, here it is. The average length of time that someone had what job has increased by 62% over the last 50 years. That's really complicated. What I'm trying to say is the average length of time that someone had this specific job used to be a lot less than what it is now. How long that person may or may not have had this job has expanded 62% over the past 50 years. I'll try and find a better way to say that next week to make it a little clearer, but you'll get a chance to guess it on next week's show. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We'll be on at 1 o'clock next Saturday. We lead into Northwestern football, and it will be a one-hour show from 1 to 2, and we hope that you will be able to join us then. Thanks so much for listening here on WGN. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association.